and welcome to another edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report. I'm Abner Gobeski.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. Today, we have three guests with us. We've got Paul. Oh, do we have to? Oh, it's the Merry Marvel Movie March. I'm sorry.
Yep.
I've just gotten so used to being chastised for doing something clever.
If you had done something clever, I wouldn't chastise you.
You don't have to do that intro, which was bad.
Today, we've got three alchemical guests. We've got Paul Wilcox.
It's great to be here.
Kevin Fredvogue.
Hey, excited to be here.
And Doug Gobeski.
Thanks for having me. And so, as you may have figured out, we are here to discuss the, I don't know how you say this, the second appendix to our Merry Marvel Movie March?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
Wait, two appendices? Yeah. Did you have an appendectomy and then it grew back?
No, I had one installed so that I could then have twice the fun.
Oh.
We're talking about the 1992 not Marvel movie, Dr. Mordred.
If it's not Marvel, then how is it part of the Merry Marvel Movie March?
I wanted an excuse to make everyone watch a bad movie, and it was not sci-fi.
Technically, alchemy isn't science.
Tell that to the guy who discovered phosphorus. Prior to today, the story I would have told you is that this is a movie that started life as a Doctor Strange movie. The story goes is that Full Moon Pictures, who we have seen before, not in the Merry Marvel Movie March, but in the Sci-Fi Shuffle as the successor to Empire Pictures, who made Trancers. And it's basically just the same people. They just have a name change. The story goes that they had acquired the rights to make a Doctor Strange movie, which, remember, back in the early 90s, the rights to Marvel movies were basically worthless. We had had Howard the Duck, the 1990 Captain America, and that's about it. Bunch of TV shows and whatnot. Nothing about the Marvel properties at that point really screamed, this is a moneymaker. So it really goes to show how things change in 25 years and then change back 5 years later. shout out to Severe Fantastic Four drop. I'm part of the problem.
How did that movie do?
Opened well, and then, like the previous Marvel movies, suffered a severe drop in ticket sales over the subsequent weekends.
So no word of mouth, then.
Yeah. The word of mouth that I heard was, it's fine. So.
Oh, I enjoyed it. It's getting close to 500 million worldwide. I don't know if that's good or bad these days, but it's more than 400 million worldwide.
I saw the
those are the brilliant insights we keep you around for, Kevin.
Thank you. I've been preparing for this all week.
I saw the comparisons being made with Superman, which has not experienced nearly as much of a drop-off. And
which is weird, because it's rentable at this point.
Right, so the suggestion was maybe it's not superhero fatigue so much as Marvel fatigue. But anyway, so yeah, the story was they got the rights, were in pre-production. By the time they were ready to start making the movie, the option had expired, so rather than lose all that work, they just changed enough of the stuff to be no longer legally culpable, and then just filmed it as Dr. Mordred. That's generally the story you see more or less across the internet, but some stuff I was looking at today suggested it's maybe not actually as clear as that. For instance, the writer of the movie says that that's not true. They never had the rights to Doctor Strange. It's simply a Doctor Strange homage. I listened to the commentary track today with the director, well, one of the directors, I guess, Charles Band and Jeffrey Combs, and they do mention that it's overtly a Doctor Strange homage, but they never said at any point we had the rights and lost them. Maybe it just never came up. So a little unclear if this really was ever at any point a Marvel property or just a Marvel homage.
Although I will point out that in the credits it says, based on an original idea by Charles Band. So that seems like the sort of thing you put in there to cover yourself.
Yeah,
I mean, all these things are exactly what someone who's trying to remain legally distinct
would say. One thing he did say, though, was that as part of the pre-production, he met with Jack Kirby, the very well-known comic book artist, probably best known for his Marvel work. So things like co-created the Fantastic Four, the X-Men, characters like that, Captain America himself, also famous for some DC stuff that is less mainstream, but still has a cult following. Anyway, Charles Band was friends with Jack Kirby and had Kirby do some like artwork and stuff. So there's some question as to whether maybe that's where part of the confusion lies, or maybe he got Jack Kirby because they were going to do Doctor Strange and Steve Ditko wouldn't return their calls. That's a deep comic book cut, but anyway, is this thing on? Tap, tap, tap.
Yeah, why would Steve Ditko not return calls?
He would. He just, it was apparently by the end of his career, a very brusque person, I guess might be the best way to put it. I don't think he was bitter the way Jack Kirby was bitter.
How was he in the 90s, I guess?
That's what we're talking about.
Okay.
I think he felt a little like Kirby, annoyed by the treatment he'd experienced at the hands of Marvel, but I don't think he was as livid as Kirby was.
Real talk, is there anyone who liked Marvel and like anyone who was like, oh yeah, they're great to work for?
Yeah, Stan Lee.
Yeah.
How about on the art side?
Yeah, I think there, well, we're getting pretty far afield here, but I think there are a number of artists who basically were like, we understood what the contract we signed said. We're not shocked that we don't get lots of money for these characters and things like that. Like, we understood this was work for hire. Does it suck? Yeah, but are we absolutely furious about it? No. But
okay.
I mean, that's part of just how comic books were made at that point when these characters were created in the 60s. I mean, you have to remember that Marvel was actually revolutionary in that they credited their writers and artists in the comic book.
You mean at all?
Yeah, at all. DC refused to do that, partly because the story goes they were worried that if they said who they were, then other companies would attempt to poach them.
I mean, I guess that makes sense, but it's very crummy behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Oof, wow.
I mean, the other thing you have to remember is that...
The bar was set real low, is what you're saying.
The other thing you have to remember is that comic books had no cultural cachet at that point, right? They were literally meant to be disposable. These were people who did not expect to work in this industry and weren't exactly necessarily proud to be in this industry. I mean, Stan Lee, famously, Stan Lee is a pen name because he didn't want to use his real name and then have it associated with this juvenile material. So we're getting far afield here. I believe we're talking about Dr. Mordred, which is the story of one Dennis Dr. Mordred, who is next in line to inherit the Dr. Mordrenschen.
That's, you nailed it.
Did I get the inflection right? Because I know that in the movie, every time they had to say that word, it was with the same hesitancy. So
Mordrenschen. Yep.
Yeah, they like they equally couldn't believe what they were being asked to say. Yeah. But in order to lay claim to the Mordrenschen, he has to spend a night in a police station where he will be forced to watch various episodes of the show 24.
Various episodes. Like, not in order.
Like not in order.
11, 7,
yep.
2.
And then he can only get the Mordred Dansion if he can successfully tell them what happened in the course of 24.
That actually sounds kind of challenging.
You can make a
That's show. Probably why the movie ends on a cliffhanger, and you don't know if he did it or not. Charlie, did I get that about right?
I got it a little bit different than that. What I saw was that this is the story of Anton Mordred, who is the landlord of his apartment building and is also a magical being. Seems, human-ish, but seemingly long-lived, who has a fight against his either childhood friend or brother, Cabal. And Cabal wants to destroy Earth, and Dr. Mordred is sworn to protect it. So magic ensues, including skeletal dinosaurs fighting and alchemy.
How many sentences was that?
Liberal use of and.
Gotcha. Okay.
Who's counting?
I don't think you put a limit on him this time, did you?
He jumped in before a limit could be placed on him.
It's implied, much like how their longevity is implied, being as they're alchemical sorcerers, and thus they have the Philosopher's Stone that gives eternal life, is my understanding of alchemy and the Philosopher's Stone.
And that's made of phosphorus, right?
I don't believe so, no.
That was explored pretty thoroughly, came up with something of a dead end.
So I guess I did things out of order and talked about the background of the movie a bit before we got into the primary question, which is, had you seen this before, / had you heard of this before?
Of course not. Just to throw that out there.
Sorry. No, and no.
the only time I've really had a forceful answer, absolutely not. I have neither seen nor heard of this movie.
And that's still true.
Yup.
I've only heard about this movie because of you, Adam. No other source. In fact, when I was on Amazon searching for the movie, I had to type in Dr. / MORDR before it would pop up.
Did you mean Dr. Morbius?
He is a doctor. You must mean that.
Surely all people want to just watch Morbius. Man, now I really want to make a streaming service like Netflix, but then just encode something where Morbius is suggested no matter the search.
Now, is it the first suggestion or the second or third?
I'd probably make it number three so that they don't immediately notice it.
That is what YouTube does with their low count videos. I don't know if any of you guys have noticed that.
It just suggests Morbius.
Well, no. Usually the third. That would actually be preferable, I think. Even if it was like, would you like to buy Morbius on Google Play?
Only $40.
Buy it again?
Okay, Google, how many times can I buy Morbius?
You can buy Morbius as many times as you would like.
I've been banned from Google for creating duplicate accounts to buy Morbius on everyone.
All right, so Kevin and Charlie had never heard of this movie before. Anyone else?
No, I have not.
I definitely had not seen this movie, and prior to you mentioning it for the podcast, had never heard of it. Which I would like to point out that I am familiar with Jeffrey Combs, and I've seen Reanimator, you know, which was Empire Pictures, so it's not like this is completely out of the realm of possibility.
One thing I learned while listening to the commentary for this is that Jeffrey Combs shows up in Trancers 2.
Wait, so we need to watch Trancers 2 is what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
As a quick related aside, for some reason I knew that this was related to Trancers somehow before watching it, but I forgot that I wasn't on the Trancers episode, and I mixed up Trancers with Scanners, and my expectations going into this movie were maybe a little elevated relative to where they should have been based on that. I'd agree. I wasn't expecting it to be good. I mean, obviously it was a low budget thing, but man, was I disappointed relative to my even limited expectations.
There's so little to look. If I were teaching a remedial film studies course, this movie would be on the syllabus.
It's the least amount of movie you could possibly call a movie. That is such a perfect take on that. Yeah. We were like 5 minutes from the end and I was like, oh, we're like, this is done. Like I thought we were just starting to get to like the midpoint.
I thought it was a mini series that fills 2 hours of TV with way too many ads.
It was a perfect Charlie movie.
I know.
74 minutes.
You're all used to these other Marvel movies you've been watching, where it's like 2 hours and 50 minutes minimum.
There was such a lack of tension, and there only felt like, because probably there were only like five people in the movie, every place felt weirdly empty, and it just felt like a lot of people milling about except the weirdly, I guess it wasn't quite a sex scene, but like when it faded to black and faded back in for the sole purpose of off-brand Dolph Lundgren touching a naked woman, like it was just a straight, it, to its limited credit, and I know I'm rambling, it
you
got
did a great
bad
job
enough
summing up why I loved it. Anyways, yeah.
I was gonna say it was bad enough that I did actually find it entertaining at times. Like, I'm not gonna give this a high rating, but when the dinosaurs were fighting each other and Mordred's just kind of staring blankly, like he has to let this dinosaur fight play out before he could possibly intervene in any way, it was an entertainingly terrible movie.
I have a nerdy objection here. I don't believe the one of them was a dinosaur. I thought it was supposed to be some sort of mammoth.
Oh, you're right. It had the tusks. Yeah, that's true.
That's why I didn't believe it. No, yeah, it was.
Although they weren't as curly as I would expect for my conception of a woolly mammoth. So,
to Jeffrey Combs' credit, in the commentary, he also notes that he's just standing there waiting for him to finish stuff. He's like, why am I just standing here?
Yeah.
And Charles Band was like, I don't know, maybe you're interested in what he's doing. You want to see what happens? Jeffrey Combs like, yeah, okay. I never actually said fully, but I had not seen this movie prior. I think I found it probably just through some random Wikipedia article reading where I was like, what the heck's this Dr. Mordred movie that's showing up under the Doctor Strange link or something? And then put it on the back burner as a thing we could do when we wanted to do a Marvel movie. And then I got the Blu-ray because I needed to clear the free shipping threshold on deepdiscountdvd.com. I think they're actually just deepdiscount.com now. But and so this fit the bill.
Did you get a deep discount on it?
I got an okay discount on this. I got a deep discount on the other thing I bought, though. So
okay.
That was like normally $60. Now it's $20 kind of thing. So
what?
It was a deep discount. This one, I think, was like normally 15, now 8 or something like that. Yeah. So the movie exists. It's got extended scenes of full nudity. And it's got a cool stop motion dinosaur mammoth fight. I don't really know what else there is to say about the movie.
It's got alchemy.
It does have alchemy.
It's got an animal sidekick of sorts.
It does.
I guess that would just, that's more of a familiar, isn't it, actually?
Mm. Well, did we see Edgar do anything familiar-like?
No, he just,
out.
Yeah, yeah, he just hangs out on a perch, flies around occasionally.
Sometimes he gets agitated. Yeah.
I mean, Dr. Mordred does tell him, like, oh, you know, watch the place while I'm gone, or like, as if he's going to do things, but like, I tell that to my dog too. So,
yeah. Not actually, he's just like, anything. Yeah, boss, I'm a bird.
I guess I'm interested to know, I mean, based on the comics, how much of this seems like Doctor Strange? I mean, I know based on the movies, but
I can see why you would watch this and come away going, oh yeah, this was a Doctor Strange adaptation. Like, the central conflict between Dr. Mordred and Cabal feels really close to Doctor Strange versus Baron Mordo. Monitor, the pair of eyes that shows up in a starfield occasionally. Mm-hmm. That seemed like that could be a pretty easy substitute for, like, the Ancient One. Okay, you give Doctor Strange like a girlfriend who lives in an apartment building with him, just so you've changed things.
Ooh, also, the neighbors have some concerns to help pad out the time.
Right, but I'm like, okay, so you change some things, perhaps A, to get away from plagiarism issues, and B, you know, so he has a love interest, because it's the 90s. He absolutely would have a love interest, even if this was officially Doctor Strange.
As an aside, I don't know who the actress was, but the hair and makeup people were like the most 90s hair and makeup I've seen. Right. Like it was pretty much like quintessential platonic ideal of early 90s women's hair and makeup for Hollywood.
The phrase I kept hearing in my head the entire movie was, wow, she is just very 90s hot.
Yeah.
You're not
wrong. Got those big shoulder pads in her jacket.
Yeah.
Not to keep just mentioning things in the commentary, but Jeffrey Combs was like, woof, my outfit didn't age well.
the gigantic baggy shirts tucked into tight-fitting pants. I definitely noticed those on more than one occasion.
And Charles Band was like, that's just what it was like in the 90s, man. That seafoam green top on a mock turtleneck.
It was making me think a little bit of Seinfeld, like Elaine and Jerry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, nailed it. I will agree that when it got to the climactic stop motion fight and then they killed Cabal, I was also surprised because I did not think we were at the end point of the movie. I thought the fight was going to be like a high point and then there'd be some more action where they fought maybe back at that castle or something. And that did not happen.
Yeah, it just seemed like a fossilized mammoth wouldn't have been enough to kill Cabal. I mean, I guess it is.
His one weakness, being stabbed.
I mean,
by a very blunt tusk.
It was so gory, too. Blood just pouring out of him.
Well, he was gored by it.
He can make a magic powder or whatever that makes him invulnerable. Or at least other people. I don't know. Maybe he can't make it for himself. Or didn't bother? I guess we established that he has hubris.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't work when magic is involved if you reanimate a skeleton.
Well, he probably couldn't stack multiple spells onto himself at the same time. And he was trying to cast the spell that releases the demon hordes from the floating castle.
There were three demons. There were a total of three demons behind that thing, at least that we are shown.
That you saw? They could all be waiting.
I guess there's probably more to see if the door slams shut on him. And I guess that's exactly what happened.
They were the scariest kind of demons, those that know how to cue.
By the way, watching that, I definitely got Shang-Chi vibes. Demons or whatever bursting through the wall. I was like, Shang-Chi's ripping this movie off.
I'm not going to say I got the same vibes as this movie. Just actually the same thing I was going to say, but kind of tangential. But when they did reanimate the dinosaurs, I kind of got into like this is like fun use of magic. Maybe they're going to like roll with this. Not that it was as good as like Doctor Strange versus Thanos in Infinity War, but like kind of a creative use of magic. Like, oh yeah, sure, dinosaur fight. But then it didn't really go anywhere and I keep calling them dinosaurs, the dinosaur and mammoth thing.
Fossil fight.
Yeah. It felt like the first step in something that could have been kind of a nice long sequence. And I guess
there's 35 years separating this movie from Infinity War.
Well, I'm not saying Endgame I expected Infinity War, and I do not know the budget of this film, so maybe I don't know. You could have just done some more stop motion stuff. I like stop motion.
Look, we killed a cop to show that the dinosaur meant business.
I did burst out laughing.
I don't even think it was a cop, secured, it was just a security. Yeah.
The armed security guard at the museum who was given a gun and who thought it was a good idea to shoot dinosaur bones with said gun, getting eaten to death by the skeleton, is where this crossed over into like ludicrous and entertaining for me.
Yeah, they definitely shouldn't have had him get eaten because that's when the stop motion wasn't working for me when there was a person in there. I really like the fossils, though. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that. I was just like, oh, man, they're really going for it.
There were a couple weird visual moments. And I like there was a slow motion scene near the very beginning of the movie that had absolutely no reason to be slow motion. And it was kind of like at like three frames per second as well.
I think that was an editing booth special. Kind of thing with like it just the shot they had just wasn't what they needed.
My impression I get is that slow motion like that is something of a Charles Band trademark. That he likes to use slow motion to sort of inject tension into scenes. I'm trying to remember if that happened in Trancers. I kind of feel like it did.
I mean, he had the wristwatch that stops time for at least 10 seconds in Trancers.
Oh, yeah, just like the amulet in this movie.
The amulet, which stops people for an indeterminate amount of time that's at least 10 seconds.
P.S. Kevin, do yourself a favor and watch Trancers. It's good.
I will take that under advisement.
Yeah, I strongly recommend, even if you don't pay for Prime, I'm like, last I checked, it was free on Prime Video. You just have to watch like 5 minutes of commercials.
I can just deal with that.
Just buy Jesse the Blu-ray for your anniversary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell her it's a gift from the heart.
Isn't that more of a birthday gift?
I think
it has more impact on an anniversary. Yeah.
It's the Trancers anniversary, if I remember the mnemonic correctly.
Transiversary.
Yeah.
How about the intro sequence? I actually kind of liked the design of his apartment. They did a pretty good job of that.
I agree.
Weird thing about it, though, was that for as much of work as they did there, like the title of the movie is like in regular font at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah. It was yellow. Thank you very much.
It was yellow.
Charlie, I would just like to remind you that the highest grossing movie of all time uses papyrus font.
Yeah, I was half expecting when she walked in the apartment for her to be like, now this asshole's got like a gigantic apartment. Why don't we have apartments this big?
But you don't know. Maybe they do.
Maybe they do. Yeah, that's the other thing I thought about.
The hallway was huge.
Yeah.
And lush.
You could fit a lot of apartments in that hallway.
In New York, no less? Yeah. Like, that'd be like 30 people just in the hallway nowadays. Just crammed in there. Sublets upon sublets.
I will say, when she said, why do you have my rent check? My first thought was not, he's the landlord, but he's a creep who steals things.
I have to admit, that was my first thought, too.
Oh, I had kind of picked up that he was the landlord at that point, because they kept saying, I don't see the landlord. And then, like, he would make them forget that they saw him. I'm like, all right, well,
that's the weird thing. He doesn't exactly make them forget. He just makes them basically zone out, and then he wanders off.
Like, imagine that, just having a practice conversation with somebody. Like, oh, that didn't go so well. I'm just going to use my amulet.
Well, come on. Do you want to talk to people about how their hot water's not working?
That's true.
Look, man, you're trying to protect the world from Cabal. Do you really have time to fix her dang garbage disposal?
I mean, that should take like 2 minutes. You just get the quarter-inch Allen wrench and just spin it a few times. 9 times out of 10, that solves your problem.
I mean, it sounds like he needs to learn how to delegate. That's kind of, you know, an important part of being a landlord.
Yeah, why doesn't Edgar handle that stuff?
Also, magic?
Do we know he doesn't?
If he can make guns, he could just make a new disposal, right?
Is he making the gun, or is he just apparating it and disapparating it?
I really wanted him to say...
He could steal one from anywhere, like a warehouse, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe he could leave some money in its place if he really cared. Yeah.
Well, maybe it's not a real gun. Did he shoot it?
Yeah, maybe it's just a lighter.
He is pretty good at lighting things on fire.
So the point at which the gun disappears, I really wanted him to just say, what gun?
So you wanted him to be kind of more of a jerk than he was. Hey, sure. He's a nice guy. Could have used a little bit more personality.
I mean, he did the lockpick thing with the hand.
That was fun. I like that.
You know, it's just more, you know, magic tricks.
This movie could have used more close-up magic, like with the handcuffs. I think that would have elevated it a little bit for me. Because, not that the effects looked particularly expensive, but there were very large gaps where there wasn't really any magic going on. And some of the magic was him stabbing himself in the chest for reasons that are still a little unclear to me.
What? Well, how was that unclear?
Yeah.
Was it made him more powerful? Yeah. Like, why did he have to stab himself with them?
He's loading his body with special knives.
Reloading.
That he then shot at the guy. Knives. In the same scene.
Oh, I didn't understand. I thought he just shot some magic juju at him. I mean, I don't know.
No, he launched the magic knife at him.
Couldn't he have just carried him?
The knives of whatever he said.
I stand by my, why did he need to stab himself in the chest with the knife to use the knife question.
He was inserting it into himself, hiding it.
Yeah.
I guess we have now established that being stabbed is the guy's weakness, so you would have to keep those...
I mean, the movie could have gone into it more. I mean, I think that's kind of a fun aspect of Dr. Mordred, is like all these different artifacts and stuff he's got. So I'm with Kevin. I didn't quite catch that.
You wanted a longer runtime.
Maybe.
I could have used a minute or two touching on the watch family that he had, which was that him? Was that him in the picture on the watch that he kept looking at?
Yes.
Okay, so some prior relationship or wife or something?
Yeah, so I think the implication is it's his wife back 100 years ago or whatever. But, fun fact I learned from the commentary, the woman in the picture is Yvette Nampar, the main woman in this, just with a different hairstyle.
Oh.
I think they were trying to suggest something about like patterns repeating or something like that.
Not just that he has a type.
Or that he has a type. You know? But it's not literally supposed to be the same person, takeaway. She's not also immortal or whatever.
Is she his like great granddaughter or something? Are they related by blood?
Well, I know. You can get it far enough generations down the line, it's probably okay.
I mean, they didn't, unless I'm misremembering, there was no explicit romance between the two of them.
Yeah, they don't even kiss at the end.
No, exactly. They, what was the last line? Like, let's go drink some eggnog or something, or watch a movie for the first time?
For the first time.
For the first time.
Anybody else wonder if his favorite movie would be Dr. Fibes?
I did not wonder that. Why did you wonder that?
Because Dr. Anton Fibes kills a bunch of people in various ritualistic ways.
Yeah, The Abominable Dr. Fibes is a 70s movie starring Vincent Price that's a sort of campy horror movie, and it's wonderful. It knows exactly what it's doing and what tone it's setting out to do, and it nails it.
That I might check out.
It was really just the Anton, because I was just like, Anton Mordred? That's a name you don't see very often.
So tell me if you agree with me on this. I think much like Trancers, what I really liked about this was that the acting was really good. Like, better than I expect from a movie of this quality. In particular, like the lead.
Jeffrey Combs?
Jeffrey Combs was fine. I was thinking Sam, the woman who played Sam.
Oh, Yvette Nampar.
Yeah. And I think everybody's doing a pretty good job here. Just kind of, you know, like you said, they're getting the assignment.
The cop who kept trying to get a date out of Sam, that actor just really felt gross, like the performance.
Yeah.
He just was perfect. It was like, oh, this is horrible.
I like the guy in the lab, too. It's like, usually this would have had some person in the lab just, like, giving exposition, but it kind of gave him a personality and, like, something to do really and kind of jokey stuff. Yeah.
It's not his fault, but I really kept being reminded of the coroner from Psych, if you've ever seen that show.
No, I haven't.
Nope.
Anyone?
Nope.
Oh, wow. No. First of all, entertaining show. Second of all, there's a coroner who does like lots of weird things, like that's a shtick. And this guy reminded me of that. Oh, I drink milkshakes in here.
I did like, too, how the milkshake like completely dripped down his face. And then when you come back to him getting unfrozen, like they've refilled it and it's still spilling on his face.
That was great. I think I would agree with you overall. I mean, with the material they were given, at least, like Jeffrey Combs acquits himself well. Everyone does a very solid job. I don't know anyone's name in this movie. The guy who kind of looks like cracked out Andrew Garfield, who
I thought that me too.
Yeah.
Distracting.
Yeah.
Fun fact, that's Keith Kolouris, whose grandfather is George Kolouris, who shows up in a bunch of Orson Welles stuff like Citizen Kane.
Oh, I'm looking.
Anyway, but yeah, distractingly looks like Andrew Garfield.
It immediately clicked in, like, yep, that is what's going on there. He was a little over the top. I mean, it's not like it detracted from the experience, but
if they were gonna make a biopic about the making of this movie, I would cast Andrew Garfield as that guy. And the other follower was attractive.
She sure was willing to get naked for the movie.
The one thing I will give that scene is that it took a long time for us to know whether that was going to be a sex scene or a murder scene.
I really wasn't sure either.
I wonder what's going to happen.
Right up until the end.
Why not both? Like,
oh, okay. What is the method of whatever he's doing? Oh, it's the kill one. Okay.
The whole thing, again, with the fade out, fade in, it just felt so awkwardly like shoved into the movie. Like,
I felt like a commercial break.
I felt like it was on TV. Like, I really
exactly felt like I was watching. Except they would never show that on TV.
Yeah, like, okay, there was at least two F-bombs as well.
Yep.
Right. I do have a bad at watching movies question. So near the end, when Cabal is about to enter the museum, he like drops the red beaker and smashes it and makes some comment. And so I think that the beaker contained the blood of that lady that he killed.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Like,
yeah,
I think it was her name that he said.
I also did not understand what was happening.
But I was like, why is he doing this? Why did he kill her in the first place and get her blood? And, like, why is he just throwing it on the ground, just leaving a bunch of glass shards in the grass for people to step on?
Same question. Yeah, I did not understand that at all. I kept expecting something to happen.
That was just one of many, like, close prop moments where I'm like, maybe don't zoom on, like, your Pyrex beaker of, like, food coloring, or, like, your acrylic knife that's just kind of caught at, like, a...
If that was the blood, I don't think he didn't really need that much blood, you know? Like, I don't think he had to kill her. He could have just, like, rained a small beaker's worth kind of been good to go.
It looked like he watered it down. Like, that was 20% blood. At least.
Yeah.
I think it was, like, a setup, right? He put the symbol on her forehead to try to frame Dr. Mordred. That's all I could think of.
And the blood thing was just like, what?
I don't know. I just don't have an explanation for that.
Well, this is a movie about a powerful, like, supernatural being putting his faith in the police.
That is true. Another thing they mentioned in the commentary, Charles Band is just like, you've been around for 100 years and you thought the police would help you?
Yeah, I did note that between this and Trancers, they're not fans of the police.
So was the idea to get the Andrew Garfield guy arrested so that he could, what, kill Dr. Mordred while he was at the police station?
Yeah.
Seems a little convoluted, but...
Any more convoluted than any of these other movies?
Do you like the expediency of, I need to get arrested, time to start yelling and throw a Molotov?
Yeah.
Because I appreciated that. It was like video game logic.
Hey, it worked.
It immediately exploded in very extreme fashion. I enjoyed that as well.
That's just how they made cop cars in those days. If action movies have taught me anything, that's just what cop cars were like in the 80s and 90s. Highly explosive. Made
of gasoline, yes.
Yeah, that's why you don't see Crown Vicks driving around anymore in real life.
Because they all exploded.
Two things I wanted to mention that we haven't brought up yet. One was a very small, stupid detail, but I love that he had a briefcase, the villain, that was perfectly designed for the exact shapes of things that he was stealing all along. It had your cozy, like, blood cut out. It had your radioactive material cut out. It was just a handsome looking suitcase, and I like that he remembered to prepare that in gathering all of these things.
Yeah, the man plans ahead. A
quiet evening, listening to his favorite tunes, like cutting the foam just right.
Yeah.
Matching the empty bottle, like, oh, this is gonna look good when there's blood in it.
I mean, Kevin, you gotta appreciate that with what we do. This the Pelican cases with the, the custom foam cutouts. Yeah,
I'm not joking. I thoroughly enjoyed that he had a perfect fit for everything he needed. The other thing we haven't talked about at all was the guy who got his eyes melted out. I don't actually know his name, but I enjoyed him. He was a nice gunner. That's right. Just like a nice, not exactly comic relief, though I think he kind of has a jokey line near the end, but just like a, this character doesn't need to exist, but I'm okay with it kind of thing.
When you talked about characters just like milling about, at that moment, I thought, like, wait a second. I don't think Gunner took a step in the whole movie. I think he's in the same spot.
To that patch of ground. I also like how he's like, he blinded me. He should have killed me. And then he's like, oh, okay, well, you can see. You don't have to kill yourself.
And he was suitably appreciative.
Yeah, that was good. It was good.
He just had a huggable vibe about him, which I thought most of the rest of the movie was lacking.
So you guys apparently picked up that his name was Gunner. I just assumed that that was his role.
Oh, it's what the...
Because he's got a gun?
It's what the IMDb said. That's that's how I knew.
It's what the credits call him.
Yeah. I also like Cabal's stick of just talking to random people and saying weird things.
Oh, yeah. That old lady that he upset for no particular reason.
Because it's fun.
I can't believe she just came up and sat down next to him.
That uninvited. Was surprising to me.
And then the kid, like, that's one of the things I really liked about this movie. It's like, when they didn't have to do something, sometimes they just added an extra line, and like the kid calls him a dickhead after he leaves. Yeah. Most movies wouldn't do that.
That is the director's son.
Another great line I loved. I'm not sure I can quite get it, but who's like, what's that buzzing noise? He's like, it's the f*** you alarm. Keep quiet.
Wait, was that the third F-bomb?
It wasn't. There's a lot of them.
I don't remember that one.
That was while he was taking Andrew Garfield up the stairs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't know. We've been talking a lot about fun bits that we liked, but I think overall, the movie, I had similar feelings to what other people said, which it doesn't feel like a lot happens. It's kind of a slow movie in some regards.
So it's his apartment, the hallway, police station, park, I guess the museum. Yeah.
Well, it's not even that. It's just like there's not a lot of like action sequences.
Yeah.
Like they face off once in his apartment a bit, and then there's a fossil fight, and that's about it. I mean, I guess there's a Molotov cocktail stuff, but I don't know. It just feels like there's something lacking in facing off between the two characters.
You want physical violence from your alchemic sorcerer.
No, I think I just want extended magic fight sequences. Like, he animates a T-Rex, so then the other one animates a mammoth, so then the other one animates a saber-toothed tiger, and then the other one makes the Sphinx come to life or something like that, you know? I realize that's a lot of stop motion, but...
I mean, they could have done little, like, crappy green screen things, at least, with, like, people disappearing and reappearing. Like, if this wizard movie had less time dedicated to our titular wizard being arrested and more with him facing off against the bad guy, I think the movie could be pretty significantly improved from what we got.
Yeah.
That is a big chunk of the runtime.
It's a solid quarter to third of it as I'm thinking back on it, which is not that, like, what, 20 minutes?
What was weird, too, is, like, he got arrested, and then when he's in the questioning room, he says to her, like, oh, getting out of here is not a problem. Like, I just need my amulet back. It's like, well, if you could do that, why did you let him arrest you to begin with? Like, why are you there if you could just get out?
Because he thought the cops were going to help him.
When they dragged him in after they arrested him in his apartment?
It's New York. That's how they work.
Like, yeah, they just said, why don't you come down to the station in my car? I can give you a ride there. You're not wrong. I mean,
that is kind of a good point. You know, if it's New York, if they haven't shot you 17 times, you know, they're probably going to be on your side.
They did all seem with very bullets.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. The whatever the sleazy cop trying to chase down a guy who was like, you know, hundreds of feet in front of him with a shotgun fired from long distance.
With the shotgun really got me. Like, I was like, I don't want to do this, but should I stop and Google, like, shotguns, police, like
practical range? Or even when Mordred was able to, like, get out of the cop's arms or whatever, and then the cop's reaction was to immediately shoot him. There's nothing in between those two extremes.
He was past the point of trigger.
To be fair, even the detective calls him out on that. He's like, what are you doing?
Dude!
I thought that was more like, dude, I'm standing right here. What are you doing? That was loud.
It's just an office pop.
Yeah, that was what I thought. Genuinely, I was thinking the same thing.
I apologize if we covered this already, but Rich Brinkley, who played Gunner, 2 years yeah. later was Captain Graybar in Cabin Boy.
Oh. We did not cover that.
I don't think we did.
Yep.
That's why he looks so familiar.
That's what made him so huggable.
Is there anything about this movie that we haven't talked about yet that you want to bring up?
I feel like we've covered nearly the entire movie scene for scene. Oh, maybe it was just a phrasing thing that I had an issue with, but I did like, not that it was exactly an unresolved plot line, but when Sam, or whatever her name was, called in the fire department because she had actual legitimate reason to believe there was a fire in that apartment, the police told her that calling in a false alarm is illegal and that they were going to press charges against her. Like, if you intentionally wasted their time, I guess I could see that being some sort of, a law that was against it. But it feels like you don't want to dissuade people who are just like 50-50%. Like, I'm pretty sure there's a fire in there, but I'm not sure. And I do not have the money to deal with the legal ramifications if I'm wrong. So
why is this door just too hot?
It's just a hot door.
I probably shouldn't call the fire department. I might get in trouble. They probably will haul me in for that. If it just turns out to be supernatural reasons.
If she had just watched Home Alone, she would have known better.
That's true.
Yep.
I just imagine the cop, too, being like, oh, I'm so angry. I'm going to go back to the station and file all the paperwork to press charges. And then I'm going to show up at the trial to testify against her. That's, like, well, that's kind of a lot of work.
He knows her from work. It's not just a random citizen. It's workplace harassment.
So ultimately, what'd you think of Dr. Mordred? Would you smash the fire alarm and call the police in for a potential fire, or would you just let the building burn? Guess I'm asking, how many fossil fights out of 10 would you give this movie?
Thankfully, I called Morbius a 1, so it's very easy for me to rank it above that. I don't have a lot to say in summary of this movie. It wasn't good, but there were some decent actors in it, and it, at moments, had that sincere, so bad it's good quality to it. Yeah, again, when the armed security guard was getting eaten by the T-Rex, there were moments that I legitimately laughed out loud at this movie. So was it a good movie? No, but it sparked some joy. Looking at my prior scores, I think I'm going to give this a 4.5 out of 10. So tying it with Venom, Let There Be Carnage, which feels right-ish. I feel okay about that. Final answer.
Yeah, it's not the greatest movie. It's a bit trifling, but it's fairly entertaining. There wasn't really anything that made me, like, extremely upset while watching it. It's just kind of not enough there. And, like for instance, when the bad guy gets gored to death at the end, I was like, that's it? He's dead? That defeated him? So I think I'm going to have to give this the same score that I gave Venom, Let There Be Carnage, and give it a 6. 6 fossil fights out of 10.
Now, so that's 6 fights between the same fossils, or are there multiple fossils involved?
It's one fight amongst 6 fossils.
Okay. 6 fossils fight.
Yes.
Yep.
Out of 10, so 4 of them just watch from the sidelines.
Would anyone else like to equate this movie to Venom, Let There Be Carnage?
Like, that genuinely was where I was putting it.
Yeah, no, right.
Right when you said yours, I was like, yeah, this is about the same as Men in Black International. I need to say Venom, because it's the same number.
So I enjoyed it. I have trouble separating the, this is actually kind of a bad movie from, I liked the vibe of, this is from the 90s and it's on TV.
Just with lots of feeling. Nudity.
Yeah. Like, it's what I in 1992 wanted to be on the TV, I assume. I don't know.
So when you were 7.
Look, you know what? Look, let's just start from the beginning again.
It was the era of the erotic thriller.
My 7-year-old and he thought it was great.
Did you?
No, Jesus Christ, no. I would never subject most of the movies in most of these marches, I would never subject my children to.
And it's not because of the age objectional parts. It's just, you know, the movie.
Yeah, you need to have good taste.
Okay. So I found this.
I'm just picturing, Daddy, can we watch Hotel Transylvania? No, you're gonna watch Citizen Kane again.
You should learn where this round came five.
Yeah, have you made it through the BFI 100 list yet?
Why is her scarf red?
It's blood.
Go to your room right now.
So I found this movie entertaining, not in the same way that Venom Let There Be Carnage or was for me, but probably my closest comparison at this point is the 1994 Fantastic Four, which I gave a 6. Not a lot happened. It was kind of hard to care about what was happening, but I find that comforting. I also had at least one laugh out loud moment.
Which was?
I think it was actually when the stop motion started and the demons were coming through the door. That's when I was like, okay, now we're getting somewhere. So I'm going to give it, I'm also going to give it 6 out of 10. 6 fossil fights out of 10.
So if I have to compare this to another movie, I mean, I can't compare it to Venom Let's Be Carnage because it really just feels like Trancers.
Let's be Carnage.
Let's be Carnage.
Let's meet Carnage. Let's Carnage.
Let us Carnage.
It feels like Trancers, and I like Trancers, and I don't like this one quite as much as Trancers, though, because I mean it does a lot of the same things. Like it has a female lead who's not quite as retrograde as in a lot of movies around this time. And it has just like scenes where there's character interaction that just goes a little bit farther than you expect it and adds a little bit extra humor. I liked his apartment the way it looked. I just kind of like the feel of it. But I mean, you're all right. It's like, it's not a very substantial movie. It feels kind of thin. And so I am still going to give it like a 7 out of 10. And I don't mean to try to compare it to the other things I've given a 7, because I think I like it in a very different sort of way. But oh, I enjoyed it. The one thing I forgot to point out, too, is that there was the fossil fight at the end. This is 1 year before Jurassic Park.
They stole the room shape and everything.
I mean, they're not the same budget, not the same thing. I get it. But I didn't think about that until we were recording.
So well,
easier to make them look realistic when they have skin and flesh on. Jeez, Charlie.
Yeah, no, it's true.
So I know you said you weren't comparing it to other movies you gave a 7 to, but just to be clear, this is on par for you with Avengers Endgame.
I mean, it gives you some time back.
I guess we'll save it for the great re-rating, which will happen eventually, right?
I mean, I guess we could do it now. We got a long gap before Spider-Verse 2.2. Yeah, I think I largely agree with what people are saying. It is entertaining. The characters, like the actors are all pretty good. I really do actually like the stop motion dinosaur stuff. Like, I really enjoyed that. That's probably the highlight of the movie for me. I just wish there was more plot, substance, story, something going on in this movie. Like, it's kind of bad when it's a 74-minute movie and it feels like it's dragging at points. It's not a great sign, but it really does sort of feel like those, a lot of the other like low budget kind of movies we've watched, like the 94 Fantastic Four, Captain America. So I'm going to rate this like those and also give it 5 fossil fights out of 10. So the fossils fight each other 5 times. It's a series. It's supposed to be best out of 10, but they said, you know what? We'll just make it best out of 5. And it went 2 each, so they had to do the final fight. Don't know who won. Well, I guess the mammoth won, because the T-Rex shattered. Anyway, thanks for joining us on our second appendix here for the Merry Marvel Movie March. The next movie we will be watching will be the 81st installment of the Merry Marvel Movie March, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. So a real barn burner to look forward to when the March returns in sometime in 2027.
Gonna start off with the nadir of...
Start off with the greatest movie of all time.
In my head, it's pronounced Quantumania.
Yeah, well, in my head, it's pronounced Nader, so...
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Nadir?
You know, I also said...
I actually literally don't know, so...
Yeah.
I think it's Nadir.
Nadir is how I've always said it, when I'm constantly saying Nadir in casual conversation.
Well, you don't want to be confused with Ralph Nader.
That's true. That's, I'm sure...
The Wikipedia says Nader.
Yeah, I was going to say, Google says Nader as well.
Or if you were British, Nadir. Let's see what the dictionary said. Well, you know, just Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Well, in a couple of years, we can have this conversation again when we review
Ant-Man.
Quantumania.
That's the segue.
The dictionary says Nader or Nadir.
Okay. So we all win.
Well, it doesn't say Nadir.
Okay.
It says Nader or Nadir.
I feel like it's implied that that's an okay, you know, way of pronouncing it.
Anyway, I'm Adam Gobeski.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. Thank you very much to our sorcerific guests. We've got Paul Wilcox.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin Vredevogue.
Nadir.
And Doug Gobeski.
It was a pleasure.
Now I have to keep that aside, Kevin. Thank you.
I hope you cut the entire conversation about Nadir out, so I just sound like a complete lunatic at the end.
That's our show. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, just like the Gobeski Wallace Report, and you can also follow us on Twitter at GW Report.
And check out our website, thegobeskiwallacereport.com.
That's probably the important bit.
Well, yeah, I guess all the other links are there, so if you remember one thing, remember that.
Not your name, but GobeskiWallaceReport.com.
More important than your name.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how I found out about this. It was Charlie, you just cleared your throat. Make sure you cut that.
We'll do.
But not this conversation.
The whole thing. It's ruined.
All right, start over from the top.
Hello, and welcome to the Gobeski Wallace Report. I'm your host, Charlie Wallace.
And I'm Adam Gobeski. That's how you talk.
I know how I talk. I have to listen to myself when I review this.